You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dominance restored. The big question going into Thursday night's showdown at Toyota Center between the second-seeded Denver Nuggets, who entered at 50-23, and the Rockets at 47-28, was whether Denver had turned a new leaf in the most recent meeting between the teams back in early February when they defeated Houston 136-122, ran them off the court in Denver. It was the first win by the Nuggets in the last 10 games of this matchup, the first in the entire James Harden, Chris Paul era. That previous 9-game win streak for the Rockets over Denver spanned 3 seasons. So the obvious question after what happened in early February, did Denver figure something out? They are well coached, after all, by Michael Malone. Or was it simply a reflection that the Rockets were not whole? Clint Capela, who normally has a huge advantage inside against Nikola Jokic, he missed that game. The Rockets were also without Daniel House Jr. and had not traded for Iman Shumpert yet, so they did not have the wing defense that we've become accustomed to seeing from them this month when the Rockets entered having won 14 of their last 17 games. And well, on Thursday night at Toyota Center, we got our answer. Yes, it was a one-off. Denver hasn't turned a new leaf, at least in the context of this matchup. The same themes that we have seen for 3 seasons now on why the Rockets are the superior team, yeah, they're still relevant and then some, as evidenced by the 112-85 beatdown the Rockets put on the Nuggets on Thursday evening at Toyota Center. So on that happy note, welcome in to a joyous post-game recap episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Thursday evening, again, the Rockets are victorious 112-85 over the Nuggets, and if there were any questions about the Rockets and their advantages in this matchup and whether they were still applicable after the 136 that Denver put on them in that February win, they were answered in a big way in this one. Defensively, Houston's effort was tremendous. They went from allowing 136 in that last game to 85 in this one. They were efficient. They turned the ball over just 10 times. They forced Denver into shooting below 40% from the field, 31 of 84. And most impressively of all, the rebounding battle, 46 for Houston to 38 for Denver. The Nuggets, one of the league's best rebounding teams. The Rockets, one of the worst. Well, led by Clint Capela, who had 17 and 15, owning the battle against Nikola Jokic, who had 16 and 8, and at times was literally gasping for air and run off the floor. Houston won the battle of the boards, which is something they have not done often this season. They were the superior defensive team, holding down Denver's offense by more than 50 points relative to the last game, and all of that adds up to a 27-point beatdown, especially when you combine it with the usual MVP brilliance of James Harden, 38 points. He also had plenty of help. We mentioned Clint Capela's 17. Of course, some of that had to do with James pushing the pace. Eric Gordon, after not scoring at all in Milwaukee, he bounced back in a big way, looked a lot healthier on that turned ankle, 18 points, made 4 of 6 from 3. Austin Rivers off the bench, a team-best plus 34, had 15 points, including 13 on 5 of 5 shooting in the first half. That certainly set the right tone. Overall, the Rockets shot 15 of 40 from behind the arc, nearly 40%. So after a night in which they barely broke 30 in Milwaukee, the shooters bounced back at home in a big way, and the Rockets claimed a win that they needed to certainly keep their faint hopes for the number 2 seed alive. Now they're 4 games back of the Nuggets. Denver falls to 50-24, Houston at 48-28, and Denver does have a very difficult schedule. So the number 2 seed, it's not completely out of play. The Rockets would need some help, but Denver does have a really difficult schedule. So if Houston continues to win, and they have won 15 of their last 18 now, it's certainly not impossible. From a more practical standpoint, the number 3 seed is what Houston is going after. That's the Portland Trailblazers, and they do remain still a game back in the loss column. For the Rockets, it's 28 losses, 27 for the Blazers. However, for Houston, this was one of the more difficult games left on the schedule, at least from a standings perspective, when you look at Denver, who entered at 50-23, the next two games, a home-and-home with a middling Sacramento team that's at 500 and out of the playoffs, they're a little dangerous, but certainly not good. You do have the one road game at the Clippers, night two of a road back-to-back. That's tough. But then New York and Phoenix at home, the Blazers do have a tougher schedule, including road games at Atlanta, Detroit, Minnesota. These are losable games, especially for a Blazers squad that doesn't have Jusuf Nurkić or CJ McCollum at the moment. So the Rockets are going to have opportunities, in my opinion, to continue moving up the standings as long as they continue winning. And here in segment one of our usual 3 points recap, I'm going to talk about what it means for the Rockets to continue dominating, again, their 10th win in 11 games against a top-shelf West opponent. To me, that's the key takeaway from tonight. There were some individual standouts. I mentioned Harden, Rivers, Gordon. We'll talk about them in segment two and segment three of our usual 3 point show. But here off the top, the key theme is what it means to continue 10 and 11 games to not just beat, but bludgeon, dominate so many of these games between the Rockets and the Nuggets. It's not even that they go down to the wire, it's that the Rockets humiliate them. And I think in large part, it starts with the Nikola Jokic and Clint Capela matchup, because that's the setting, the five spot, where Denver owns most of their games. Jokic is a deserving MVP candidate, and yet he still has no idea what to do with Clint Capela. Capela is the rare breed of big that he's athletic enough to play in space. We know Jokic, he's a great passer. He can shoot threes. He's got the mid-range game. A lot of fives aren't comfortable out in space, and he can take advantage of those. And if they are comfortable playing in space, they're athletic enough to do that, then they probably don't have the bulk to compete with him on the low block, and then he can just go old school in the post, bully ball, and beat them up that way. Against the Rockets, Capela is one of the few centers that is versatile enough from both an athleticism standpoint and a power standpoint to compete with Jokic in all areas. So offensively, he doesn't have the usual edge that he does. And then on the defensive end of the floor, Jokic just has no ability to hang with Clint Capela in the pick-and-roll game. If Chris Paul, James Harden, if one of those guys gets a step, it collapses the Denver defense. He's not able to stick with Capela. And then where it's really apparent is in transition, because Jokic just does not have the fitness to keep up with Clint Capela, his willingness to run the floor. There were so many sequences when Capela would get a rebound or block a shot, and then he would still beat Jokic up the floor. There were moments in which you could see Jokic literally gasping for air and having to be taken out of the game. He only played, I believe, 25 minutes tonight. Clint Capela is just such a rough matchup for him, and if you can take the other team's best player out of the game, and let's not act like he was horrible. Again, Jokic did have 16-8, but he was nowhere near the borderline MVP form that he's been at for much of this renaissance season by the Nuggets, winning 50 games after the near miss a year ago when they came so close to the playoffs but lost out on the final day of the year. So I think that's far and away the biggest advantage the Rockets have over the Nuggets. And what does it mean as far as the playoffs? Of course, if Houston can get the number three seed and Denver's the number two, or if Denver somehow catches Golden State for the one, they're now a game back in the loss column, but Denver has a much more difficult closing stretch than Golden State does, so that seems unlikely. Either way, the early takes I've seen are, okay, the Rockets have beaten Denver 10 of 11 times. We all acknowledge this Capela versus Jokic mismatch, and Houston should just do everything to be on Denver's side of the bracket so that they're slotted to play in the second round. I do agree with that, but it's mostly about Golden State and the reality that I would like to defer the Golden State matchup as long as possible for reasons that here at Locked On Rockets should be no secret to our listeners. I think it's better if you put that off to the Western Conference Finals. Who knows, maybe somebody even beats Golden State before then, but at the very least, because Golden State is so supremely talented, I would like to see them at least worn down a little bit before they play the Rockets, get at least some benefits of attrition. So, to me, that's why I want Denver's side of the bracket. It's less about Denver specifically, and it's more about deferring the inevitable Golden State matchup. As far as Denver specifically, I do think that in terms of whether you are on their side of the bracket or not, the advantage of this matchup is still relevant. Because even if, say, you're the four and Golden State's the one, or you're the three and Golden State's the two, and you're not slotted to play Denver until the Western Conference Finals, there is still a huge edge to having your potential Western Conference Finals opponent be either a team that you have this mental stranglehold over and such a huge physical matchup advantage, or if Denver loses before then, let's say they're a bit of a paper tiger. I don't know how much I believe that. I think they're a very good team and Houston's just a tough matchup. But even if Denver loses before Houston gets the opportunity to play them, what does that mean? It pretty much means that most likely Denver was beaten by a team in the bottom four in the West, and by virtue of that, Houston would then have home court advantage in the Western Conference Finals. So either scenario is still really good. Even if you aren't on their side of the bracket, if you have that much of an advantage, and I do think a lot of it is mental, because Denver, in the first 10 minutes plus of this game, they were up 7. They were up 23-16 until the final 95 seconds of the first quarter. And that's when Austin Rivers got going. Amon Shumpert hit a three. The Rockets got back within striking distance. And then they hit the so-called turbo nuclear button, hat tip Karthik Prasad, in the second quarter. They scored 40. They were up by 18 at the break. And they never looked back. Denver, even when they got off to a good start, all it took was one counterpunch from the Rockets. And it just felt like the style of play flipped. Here we go again. Houston, in addition to the matchup edge, at this point, when you continue to beat a good team down this many times, at some point, it does become psychological as well. And of course, I would love to see Houston play Denver at some point. But even if it's not in round two, if you're telling me that the Rockets beat the Warriors and this is the Western Conference Finals opponent, that's a great thing. And if the Rockets lose to the Warriors, well, the reality is they probably weren't going to beat the Warriors anyway, so what's the point? So to me, while, of course, I would like to be on the Denver side of the bracket, it's not as if the advantage goes away. Because if you beat Golden State in round two, okay, you've still got to win the Western Conference Finals. That's no gimme. And in this scenario, you're either looking most likely at a Denver team that, even though you wouldn't have home court, you have this enormous matchup advantage against. And if Denver loses before then, well, guess what? Then you've got home court advantage back in the Western Conference Finals. The very thing that you thought you had lost, somehow you could get it back. So either way, this advantage is a big deal. It positions the Rockets well for down the road. I would like for Houston to be on the Denver side of the bracket and defer that Golden State matchup. But if it doesn't happen, okay, give me this Nuggets team as a Western Conference Finals opponent. That's still, even if it's not the ideal scenario, it's not a bad one either. When you have one of the top two teams in the West and you are not a top two team, which the Rockets unfortunately are not, going back to that 11-14 start, you're going to have some headwinds you have to overcome. You're going to have to beat some of the big boys. And when one of the two best teams in the league all season long, say what you will about how they play against the Rockets, but we have nearly 75 games of evidence that shows that, yes, Denver is one of the big boys of the West. That is going to be a huge matchup advantage and an ace in the hole card for the Rockets down the line. So, yes, I hope the Rockets are the three, because I think it's trending towards Denver being the two, especially because with this loss tonight, Denver falls a game behind Golden State, and Houston wins one of the games that on paper at least look like a potential 50-50 toss-up type game. The Nuggets did and are rested, so I really thought going in this was an opportunity they could shed some of the stereotypes, and not only did they not shed them, Houston played them up even more. What a huge matchup advantage it is, and to me that's by far the biggest takeaway. When you have this kind of edge against a top-tier team in the playoffs, yeah, it's hard not to extrapolate what that means down the line. And of course, the Rockets as a whole, beyond just the Denver matchup, the fact that so many of these big games, they've beaten the Nuggets and the Warriors both 3 out of 4 times. That's the two top teams in the West, and the Rockets clinch the season series and potential tiebreaker over both, should they get fortunate enough for that to matter. In the East, they beat the Raptors twice, the Celtics twice. Really, the Bucks are about the only top team in the league that the Rockets haven't had a lot of success against. So for the Rockets, again and again, because they're not going to be at least at the number one seed, they're going to have to overcome something in the playoffs. So to be able to overcome that type of start and play your best ball against that type of opponent and that type of stage, James Harden got to show out, the MVP was on the line, at least to some degree. This was a statement game, and there aren't too many nationally televised spotlight type games left. It's always nice to see that your team has that extra gear. So to me, that's what we saw yet again from the Rockets. It's huge to have the matchup advantage over the Nuggets. Beyond that, it's just nice to have a team that is capable of elevating its play when the game and the stage is this big. Now, as we continue our way through the usual 3 points recap, segments 2 and 3, I want to spend our attention to the individuals. Because segment 1, we discussed what it means, team as a whole, matchups, seedings, been talking about that for a few days. To me, that's clearly the leading takeaway, just because this has happened so many times in these Rockets-Nuggets games. We talked about Clint Capela in segment one, because I think Capela versus Jokic, even if Harden was the MVP of the game and the season, 38 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, I think it's Capela that might be the MVP of this particular matchup in terms of why it tilts so much towards the Rockets, because it chips away at what Denver usually does best at the 5 spot. So Clint, beyond just the numbers he put up, I thought this was physically as imposing, as fit as he has looked since the All-Star break, since coming back from the thumb surgery. And to me, that was always the biggest thing. How does he hold up on the low block? What is his fitness? Can he run up and down the floor? So to see him play that well over 30 minutes against Nikola Jokic, hold up on the low block, continue to run the floor and succeed at both ends, to me, it shows you that he is feeling good. It's never been the thumb that I've been worried about. It's more about the strength, the balance, the fitness. This was the best that I've seen from Clint. We know what we're getting from James. We'll talk about him in the third and final segment. I know I'm burying the lead, but we've come to expect it from James for a while. It's whether he has the help. Tonight, Clint was obviously, I would say, the 1B to Harden's 1A, but the Rockets also had some really good secondary options that stepped up in this game. What really caught my eye was Austin Rivers, who has mentioned a team-best plus 34 in his 29 minutes, 15 points. Even though he's missed a few games of late as the Rockets try and sort out their way through now potentially 11 rotation players. Of course, they're not going to play 11 guys in the playoffs, but they're trying to make sure they have all the data possible to make decisions on guys like Iman Shumpert, Gerald Green, who are likely competing for one slot in the playoffs, that sort of thing. Even though Rivers has sat a couple of games, I think that's largely been to let him heal. Because as we've seen in Houston, he has never been fully healthy. He had issues with his shooting elbow, fingers on his shooting hand. And the big story, we've seen some really nice games from Austin Rivers. His defense on Russell Westbrook and Damian Lillard, Steph Curry type players. You can throw Kyrie Irving in there as well. One-on-one, he might be the best perimeter defender on ball that they have. The issue is that on the offensive end, a guy who has shot 37 and 38% from three, a relatively high volume the last 2 years, it's a good shooter, 35% for his career. He's shooting below 32% this year. I don't know if he's been injured, if he's out of rhythm. The bottom line is that Rivers has been playable, even though he is shooting an unsustainably low figure. So if he gets back to the guy he has been the last 2 years, and this is a guy that's in his mid-20s age-wise, assuming he's healthy, and hopefully now that's what the rest is doing, is allowing him to get healthy going to the playoffs, there's no reason to think that his shot should just fall off the way it has. He should be able to bounce back. And just as we've seen Eric Gordon bounce back in March, more on that momentarily, well, Austin Rivers, if he can bounce back, going from a low 30s three-point shooter to an upper 30s where he was the last 2 years, that would be massive for the Rockets entering the playoffs, because this is already someone that's valuable to you. Even though he hasn't shot that well, I still don't think there's ever been a day that Mike D'Antoni has doubted whether he'd be in the playoff rotation simply because of how useful his on-ball defense is against the types of quicker guards that populate so many of these good Western teams. Well, now, if you can combine that defense with him getting hot from a shooting perspective, he also made 3 three-pointers tonight, that bodes really, really well. And you combine the defense with the shooting, that's how you get plus 34. Now, this is one game. I don't think we should say that, wow, because Austin Rivers got it going against the Nuggets, that he's fixed. Woo, he's back to what he was the last 2 years. No, that would be an overreaction. All I'm saying is that it is something to watch. Because when you look at his career, it's this year that's the outlier. He should be better than this. So perhaps this is the start. Just as March for Eric Gordon has been very good, maybe this is the start, late March and heading into April, that Austin Rivers can start to turn it around, especially heading into the playoffs. And of course, it's a contract year for Austin. This is when his current large deal expires. So he's fully financially incentivized to have a big postseason run. Hopefully this is the start of it, because I think he's going to play regardless, simply because of what he provides you on the defensive end of the floor. It's just whether he can get going offensively enough to really make him a plus player. Tonight, he did, and he turned the game. He was out there when the Rockets, he hit the first three, actually, when the Rockets started to flip it from a 7-point deficit late in the first quarter to an 18-point lead at the half. The other guy in the backcourt that was big tonight is the guy we always talk about as a variable, Eric Gordon, 18 points, 7 of 11, four of six from three. Also, throw a shout out to PJ Tucker, who played good defense, plus 16 in his 26 minutes, made one of his two threes. And the reason I throw in PJ Tucker, we talked about on Tuesday in Milwaukee, the loss, they combined for 3 points on one of 16 shooting. Well, tonight they made five of their eight threes and overall had 21 points. Eric went from 0 to 18. So the two guys who missed all those open shots in Milwaukee, they made them tonight at a 50% or better clip from behind the three-point arc. And Eric in particular, Mike D'Antoni said he probably should not have played just 2 days after that turned ankle in New Orleans, but it was such a big game, he wanted to go out there. Tonight, he looked much, much fresher. And if there's any doubt, after Saturday's game, the Rockets don't play again until next Tuesday, so you're going to get at least 1 day off in between there and really 72-plus hours considering the time change before playing basketball again. So there is an opportunity to let whatever's going on with that ankle heal up. You get one more game at home on Saturday against the Kings. It's a competent opponent, but one definitely you should beat, a team that's not going to be in the playoffs. And then you get a little bit of built-in rest before you go on that two-game West Coast swing. So when Eric Gordon shoots like this, really, the version of the Rockets that entered Milwaukee having won 14 of their last 16, yeah, that was with the Eric Gordon we saw on Sunday that had 18 points in just 21 minutes. He in March, who entered the Milwaukee game again, shooting nearly 50% from three. When Eric Gordon is right, the Rockets are at their best. Tonight, he was right and had 18 points on 4 of 6 shooting from behind the arc, 7 of 11 overall. And what a surprise, the Rockets bounced back to form. So in my opinion, it really is that simple. We say it game after game, but tonight's more evidence. When Eric Gordon is right, this is the difference between the Rockets being good and the Rockets being great. It helps when they defend the way they did tonight, limiting the Nuggets to 85 points after giving up 136 in the last meeting between these two teams. That's a big deal. Certainly the rebounding edge, 46 to 38. Those are things the Rockets need to control better. And throughout the season, it's been an issue. But really, since the All-Star break, the Rockets, they have been a good defensive team. Their net rating has actually been top 5, top 10 on both ends since the All-Star break, this stretch in which they've now won 15 of their last 18 games. They've been playing better defense now that they're fully healthy, and they've got Daniel House Jr. back. They made the trade for Iman Shumpert, who I thought with 7 points tonight, 3 of 5 shooting, 1 of 2. This was one of his sneaky, impactful games. Also had a couple of assists. He makes smart plays out there, especially on the defensive end. The Rockets have improved. It's been under the radar, but they've gotten better on that side. It's offensively where they have a lot more variance, and of course it's because you take all the threes that they do. You're inherently going to have some games when you're hot and some that you don't. Eric Gordon, of course, is the epitome of that dynamic, and at times it can be ugly, as evidenced by him not scoring in Milwaukee, but at times it can be really damn good, too. And tonight's a reminder, if he's healthy, he can be dynamic, and the biggest priority, besides winning games and playoff seeding down the stretch for the Rockets, it's to make sure Eric Gordon is physically right heading into the playoffs. If he is, and they get this version, and then you combine that with James Harden, Clint Capella, and the rest, then yeah, that's when the Rockets go from a pretty good team to one that now, at 48-28 and having won 15 or less 18, can absolutely contend to win it all. And remember, to get this show every day, please subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Now entering the final segment of our usual 3 points recap here at Locked On Rockets. In this case, we have saved the best for last, and that's James Harden, who led the way again, 38 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds, 10 of 22 shooting, 5 of 11 from 3, 13 of 14 from the free throw line. Yes, he finally got calls again after a couple of games in which he could not get a whistle to save his life. And he scored 16 in the first half, which was good enough. Then scored 16 in the third quarter alone, 22 in the second half, as the Rockets put their foot on the throat and really put it away. Because to start the third quarter, the Rockets went on such a big run in the second quarter, outscoring Denver 40-19. There was always going to be a little bit of let-up. You expend that much energy, especially a big like Clint Capella, who's running up and down the floor. Even though his fitness is better than Nikola Jokic, it's not like there's no toll. You could see early in the second half that Capella didn't have quite the same juice that he did in the first. And for James Harden, that's when it's more important for the star to really put his imprint on the game. Because your role players, it's going to be unlikely for role players to truly dominate an entire game. What you need from guys like Capella, Austin Rivers, Eric Gordon, is to own certain stretches. If they can have a really quality 6 to 8 minutes. And even if they're not able to sustain it for a full game, the thing is, you have James Harden, and if you have those role players doing what they do in the first half, then ultimately you're buying time until hopefully the MVP has one of his explosions. And the Nuggets, even though they lost by 27, they didn't go away quietly. They got within 12 in the third. They kept pushing. Every time it felt like, okay, this is when they're going to mail it in, they didn't. And it took James Harden really exploding late in that third quarter to boost it up to a 20-point game. And eventually, the Rockets, thankfully, heading to the fourth with a 20-point lead. Unlike so many other games this season where they've let teams back in it, they did not. And that's why James Harden stayed out there until there were about 3 minutes left. I think it's important to set the right tone from a culture standpoint. I like that tonight, too. They really did not seem to let their foot off the gas once they went and got that lead. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that the role players were good in the first half. That allowed James Harden to save some of his energy. And then the second half, Harden does what an MVP, what a franchise player does. And that's serve as the closer. And even if the door was slightly ajar for Denver, I'm not going to say any lead in the current NBA is safe. Well, Harden was there to shut it early in the fourth quarter, late in the third quarter. Again, 22 points in the second half, including 16 in the third, as the Rockets seemed to have an answer every single time Denver tried to get it down to 12, 13, and had a little bit of hope. There was James Harden to put it away. And if you remember, during his streak, the 32 consecutive games of 30-plus points, he needed a miracle in Denver, that 136-122 loss when the Rockets were just a disaster on defense. What went under the radar in that game, and the Nuggets do have a lot of good, handsy, active guards, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris types. Harden really had to struggle to get to 30. Will Barton certainly kind of fits that same dynamic, that same blood. And it took Harden in garbage time. That was as empty of a 30 as Harden had in his streak. He started well the first quarter in that game, but the Nuggets, between their length, how active they were, they really disrupted him. And I think part of it was that he didn't have the vertical spacing of Clint Capella, which does so much to Nikola Jokic and what his usual role is in the defense. It puts Denver out of sorts. Not having that dynamic in the last game, that's why I say Capella's the MVP in the matchup. Even if he's not the best player, he may be the most valuable against Denver, because not having him also impacts what James Harden can do. Tonight, because Capella, especially in the first half, was such a dynamic threat and in transition, then you had Denver thinking and responsible for so many different things that it simplified the game, it made it a lot easier, and as I said after Sunday's game in New Orleans, it's always nice to have your star player feeling good and in rhythm. Tuesday was an off game for Harden. He was 9 of 26, really the entire team. No one shot well in Milwaukee, and that's also a really good defense, really long. But if there were any concerns about, well, are they going into a slump? Is there some sort of residual psychological effect from having another game that was somewhat reminiscent of the 0 for 27? I saw some throw out that analogy. Well, the Rockets, that's their thing. For better or for worse, they're going to shoot threes. They have short memories. They don't care how much they miss within a game or the game before. They're going to keep shooting for the Rockets as a whole. They made a lot of threes tonight, nearly 40%. And doesn't matter what happened Tuesday. It doesn't matter if this was another really good opponent. They were right back at it, and the shots went in tonight. And of course, it makes sense if that dynamic is led by their best player in James Harden. So to me, of course, seeing the synergies between Harden and Capella, that's really nice. But to see him shut the door and to see him bounce back from the game he had in Milwaukee, which wasn't bad, 23-10-7, one of the only guys that produced at all for the Rockets offensively in that game, but it wasn't peak Harden. To see him the very next game in a statement matchup against the number two team in the West, it's big. And as far as the MVP race, this is the final thing I'll sign off with tonight. I do think that this game could be very meaningful. Because Tuesday, I don't think it really moved the needle either way, the Rockets and the Bucks. All it really told us was that the Bucks, they've been a more consistent team this year, especially in the defensive end and playing at home. Giannis had 19-14. Harden had 23-10-7. Really, if you watch that game, the storyline was that the Bucks' teammates did more for Giannis than Harden's teammates did for him. And it wasn't like Giannis did something to make life easier for them than Harden was for his teammates. No, a lot of Harden's teammates were wide open. They just missed the shots. So I really don't think, and that's just it's not just my opinion, just also watching the national media reaction, I don't think Tuesday's game moved the needle all that much. However, I do think on the road against Giannis, and now the Rockets 0-2 against the Bucks, it was a bit of a missed opportunity for Harden to truly propel himself. Well, to come back two games later in a marquee setting and help the Rockets hopefully move up the Western Conference standings, this is a big one, because there's not that many marquee games left. We're now under 2 weeks left in the NBA's regular season, which is all that will be voted on. The Bucks are almost certainly going to be the number one in the East, so they don't really have that many national TV spotlight games left. The Rockets, their schedule largely eases up. I know they have the Clippers night to have a road back-to-back, and I suppose the season finale in Oklahoma City, which could be meaningful for both teams, although who knows, since that's the season finale, the second-to-last day of the season, last for the Rockets, then maybe some people's minds and votes are already made up by that point. Who knows? This, in many ways, especially in the national scene, was sort of a parting shot. So to see Harden play this well against a really good and respected opponent, it could make the difference for MVP. Now, that's not the biggest priority for the Rockets. Biggest priority by far, and it's why we let off talking about it, is what it means in the standings. They've won 15 of 18. They're 48-28 on the year, which ties their high water mark at 20 games over 500. They've beaten Denver, a top two team in the West all year, now for the 10th time in 11 games, going back three seasons. All of that is more important. But of course, the Rockets want Harden to win MVP. It's good for the franchise. It's good for him personally. He enjoys it. It's good for branding. Of course, it could help down the line in terms of attracting other potential stars or players to Houston. Even though the MVP isn't what you play for, it's also not irrelevant. And tonight, in my opinion, beyond winning the game, I do think it was also some headway for Harden in the MVP race. Wasn't enough? I don't know. We'll see. I think it's going to be a close race. There's a lot of variables, and who knows what happens over the final 12 days or so of the season. But whereas Tuesday, I would say, was a relative non-event, tonight was definitely a step forward for Harden. I don't know exactly if it pushes him over the hump, but it certainly helps. And on top of a night that was already great for the Rockets, and really great for everything in Houston sports, Astros winning their opener over the reigning AL Cy Young winner in Tampa. Check out Locked on Astros, hint, hint, we just launched that within the past week. What was already a great day in Houston sports, and especially for the Rockets, it ends on an even better note, because the 22 that Harden put up in the second half, 38 overall, also 6 points, or 6 assists and 6 rebounds, that should really help his MVP case as well. So, with all those positives stated, I think that's a good place to end this podcast, our second of a lovely Thursday in Houston sports. If you want more content before our next show this weekend, the Rockets do have a Saturday afternoon matinee against the Kings. The best place to hear from me before then is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked on Rockets. And also don't forget Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. We've got a website at LockedOnRockets.com and an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All those are ways you can ask questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, access, as mentioned, our prior content, talk to me about the team. Pretty much anything I can do to make this a better show for you, a better experience for you as a Rockets fan, as a human being, don't hesitate to reach out by email. Again, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, because we do have some great advertising specials as well, if we can help you out that way. Whatever it may be, I would love to hear from you. As always, thanks for listening. And remember, you can subscribe to the show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked on Rockets. So with the plugs complete, this is where we'll leave it. Once again, the very happy final from Toyota Center. Rockets 112, Nuggets 85, Houston improves to 48-28, James Harden 38-6-6, Clint Capella against Nikola Jokic 17-15. And as far as this matchup between the Rockets and one of the big boys in the West, currently the number two, the Rockets have beaten Denver now 10 times in the last 11 meetings between the teams. How sweet it is. On that note, enjoy your weekends, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked on Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.